This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith episode number 116, and it's late November 2015. This week, John Palmer, the award-winning author of How to Brew, joins me to discuss German wheat beers. Thank you to this week's sponsor, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They are offering 6 issues a year, up from 4 at a great discount. They're offering a new discount code, which gives you 15% off everything they sell, including subscriptions and training. The new code is BeerSmith2015. I encourage you to check out this great new magazine for homebrewers at beerandbrewing.com and use the offer code BeerSmith2015 to get your 15% discount today. And also Beersmith software. Design great beer, brew with confidence, and brew your best beer every time with Beersmith brewing software. Beersmith lets you create your own recipes from scratch or access tens of thousands of recipes found on the Beersmith cloud. Also, our desktop and mobile version work seamlessly together to make brewing easier. Give Beersmith a try today by downloading the free 21-day trial from beersmith.com. Get your free trial today at beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. My guest today is Mr. John Palmer. John is the author of How to Brew, the top-selling beer brewing book in the world, as well as Water and Brewing Classic Styles. John also joined me for the How to Brew video series available from beersmith.com/DVD. John, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks, Brad. It's great to be here.
So we were together just a couple weeks ago at the Wisconsin Beer Craft Beer Festival. A lot of fun there. Where have you been going since then, though? I understand you took a big trip here recently.
Yeah, I recently was in Germany, in Bamberg, visiting Weyermann Malts. They're having their annual open house and Bavarian Fest, and it was really a lot of fun.
Sounds rough, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of beer and sausages and polka music, but a great bunch of people. Really had a great time there, and then after Bamberg, I went down to Nuremberg for a day, and then on down to Freising and visited the, some friends at the Technical Institute or University there of Munich in Freising.
And of course, Weyermann is one of the larger maltsters, right?
Right. Yep. Very good maltster. A lot of great products, and we had a lot of fun doing a pilot batch, brewing a smoked oat. Oktoberfest wheat beer. So
smoked oat wheat Oktoberfest beer.
Yeah. Oak. There we go. Oak smoked wheat malt beer. No okay. oats. Just
so it was smoked oak. Wheat then.
Yeah, smoked wheat with oak.
That's
but it's
awesome.
Real tongue twister trying to say.
Yeah. Say it 5 times really fast.
Yeah, well, I can't.
Okay, well, today we're going to talk a little bit about German wheat beers, I think. And yeah. You just got back from there. I assume you sampled some.
Sampled a few.
A few, yeah. Can you start by describing what some of the major wheat styles are?
Well, there's three dominant styles that you read about in the BJCP. There's the Bavarian Weiss beer or Weizen, which is a lot like just saying wheat pale ale. It's a very broad category, and a lot of brewers in Germany, you know, brew wheat pale ales with the wheat, you know, the phenol and clove or clove yeast strain.
Bavarian, I think they call it Bavarian wheat yeast strain, yes. Right? Or Weisstephan is another word I've heard, right?
Right. Has that distinctive banana and clove flavor to it. And so you get a lot of different wheat beers, different colors. The word Weiss refers both to white and to wheat. And, so these are predominantly a pale beer. A Hefeweizen can be more pale, and that's a sub-style of Weiss beer. Mm-hmm. Where then you can also have some amber and red versions as well, with and without the yeast. So you've got your basic Weiss beers, including Hefeweizen and Crystal. You've got your Dunkelweiss, which are a dark beer, and kind of very similar in terms of like a amber ale or brown ale compared to a pale ale. And these beers are darker versions of the standard Weiss beer and have some toast caramel notes to them and just add a lot of warmth to the beer style. All of these beers are intended to be session beers. They're only about 4.5-5% alcohol at most, 10-50 OG kind of sort of thing. But they do make a strong version, known as a Weissenbach, and that's exactly what it says. Is it's a strong wheat beer, along the lines of say a Bock or Double Bock, in terms of the other traditional lager styles, and they're brewed with all of these beers are predominantly brewed with wheat, at least 50%, sometimes as much as 60, 65, 70% wheat used in the grist bill.
So a lot of these are tied closely to Bavaria. Did you learn anything a little bit about the history while you were there?
Well, yes. You can probably be better off reading, say, Stan's book, on brewing wheat beer to get the real story. But from what I remember, wheat beer was kind of an invention or a proprietary brand of nobility in the 1600s, and brewed, licensed to that one family, and they brewed it. And then by the early 1800s, that brewery had gone out of business, or that family had ended their brewing. And then Schneider and Sohn picked up the brand in, not sure what year, late 1800s, early 1900s.
Okay.
And they, revived the style, and it has become much more popular in the last, 70 years or so. And you can, find lots of wheat beer brewers all around southern Germany. Bavaria is in the southern part of Germany. It's like the southern state or counties. Yeah. And so these are predominantly referred to as a southern beer style, or a southern wheat beer style. There are northern wheat beer styles, such as Berliner Weiss, which is, a slightly sour or, wheat beer, a little and much paler and lower gravity than these Dunkelweiss or Weissbachs. And the Rheinheitsgebot, prevented
the German purity law, right?
Yeah, the German beer purity law actually prevented brewing wheat beer, and that was one reason why it was reserved to one family. Again, my history on these may not be perfect, so there's a lot of other.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, but I mean, it's an interesting story, and being there in Germany was just an amazing experience to really get a sense of the history and seeing some of these breweries, and realizing that they've been, in production for the last, 200, 400, even 1,000 years, in some cases there in Germany. So great brewing tradition there, and it was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Well, what are some of the characteristics that make the German wheat beer so unique?
Well, again, it's the high percentage of wheat malt. It's the characteristic banana and fruit esters, the clove phenol character that comes from the yeast. These are very low bitterness beers. The emphasis is definitely on the malt. These are a soft, bready, warm session beer, and the clove and banana aromas really act as a complement to that soft, bready, body and, you know, in base beer. You're not brewing an aggressively hopped beer by any stretch of the imagination. You shouldn't be tasting hops really in these beers, although some subtle character may be present. And you're not brewing a beer that where the yeast character is the dominant characteristic. Again, it's meant to be an accent. It's meant to be a warm, bready malt character with accents of fruit and cloves to give it some liveliness.
What are the differences between German Hefeweizen, regular wheat beer, and Cristal?
Okay, well, these are, you know, kind of like sub-styles of Weiss beer, regular Weiss beer, which again is kind of like referring to pale ale, you know. There's a lot of different sub-styles, you know, east, you know, here in the United States, East Coast, West Coast, pale ale, in terms of the hopping rates. Well, in Germany, you'll have Hefeweizen, you'll have Cristal, which is a filtered Weiss beer, brewed with the same yeast, brewed, you know, in many cases with the same grist bill. The main difference being that the yeast is filtered out to make the body a little bit lighter and more visually appealing. Not every brewery has both a Hef and a Cristal. Some will have one or the other, depending on their preference. The flavor profile between these different styles is very, very similar. The clove and esters from the yeast act as an accent, a nice accent to the beer.
So here's a picture, I guess, of two of them. This looks like at least to me, you got the Clear on the left and the Hefe on the right, right?
Right. And Erdinger is one brewery that does you know, both versions.
And you can also see the white fluffy head here. They very highly carbonate these beers, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's another characteristic of these beers that I didn't think to mention, that these will be carbonated to like 3.5-4 volumes of CO2 versus say a typical 2 to 2.5 volumes for most American styles.
Yeah, and they have, if I recall, when I was in Germany, they have so much carbonation, they actually pour it in stages, right?
Yes, they do. They'll start pouring, set it aside, let the head subside a bit, and then they'll bring it back and fill it, you know, until they get the beer level up to the right level and maintain a nice head on top. Let's look at some of my notes here. Again, you will within wheat beer, you'll have both amber and red versions, where the amber will be a nice, you know, soft amber orange color, and the red versions will be you know, have some extra, say, Kara wheat or you know, medium crystal malts in there, some darker, you know, some traces of dark crystal to give a nice red color, like a sunset, and that's a very popular style variation there in Germany.
So let's look at a typical German Weiss beer. What does the profile of it look like? You know, color, bitterness, gravity, where are we?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the color, you're looking at 2 to 6 SRM, which is equivalent to 4 to 12 EBC. Mm-hmm. So it's a pale gold to yellow kind of color. At the high end, at 6 SRM, you'll be starting to go to a little deeper gold, almost amber. But again, typically pale, and that's where the Weiss, the white name description for these beers comes from. The gravity on these beers is not high. Typically, the original gravity is anywhere from 1044 to 1052. That's, you know, producing 4.5 to 5% ABV. The IBUs are low, 8 to 15, because again, you really don't want to taste hops. You just want just enough bitterness to balance the sweetness of the malt. But you know, this is a malt beer that you're drinking.
So you kind of really just wave the hops over the top of the kettle, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And perhaps not as much as Budweiser does, but you know, close. Yeah. Yeah, it's, these are light sessionable beers. The Dunkelweizen is a little darker, and that's going from 14 to 23 SRM. So there's a little bit of a gap there. You know, you're kind of skipping over the amber color zone, the amber to copper. Right. Again, because that's... that's often in not in terms of the BJCP style, but in terms of the actual typical German beers that you drink and that you find in Germany, they include those amber colors. But a Dunkel has some more caramel malt, some toast malt, some melanoid malt added in, and it helps to change the flavor profile of the beer from a soft white bread to a deep dark bread, a richness and kind of a sweetness, warmer bread flavor to the beer, again with those same esters and phenols to liven up the aroma. Same kind of hop profile, you know, that is very little to none, but now you're going from a soft bread to a rich bread, warmer beer with the Dunkels.
So, John, walk us through brewing a typical Weiss beer, starting with the grain bill.
Okay, well, you start off with about 65%, let's say, wheat malt. That's a good number, good starting point. Typically, the next malt is either a very fine Pilsner malt or a Vienna malt is also a popular choice at about 30% of the grain of the grist bill. And then you'll have, say, 3% of like a Caramel 30 or Karastan, you know, kind of a medium crystal malt to give it some color. Again, you know, just hints of orange to kind of liven it up. And then very often the brewers will use like 2 to 3% acidulated malt. And this is to help get the pH of the mash.
You know, that would be, we call it acid malt, right?
Yes, right. And that's a malt that has lactic acid in it, or, you know, coating it, and helps bring your mash pH down closer to that 5.2 level that the brewers strive for. And mash pH is very important in these pale beers to keep them lively. If the pH of these pale beers climbs to say like 5-6 or higher, then you don't get the brightness from the malt character. It becomes a much softer and not as interesting beer to drink.
And what kind of hops do you recommend for a Weiss beer?
Well, hops should be your traditional German varieties. So Hallertauer Mittelfrüh, Tettnanger, Spalt, some of the newer varieties like Hallertau Tradition or Opel, Saphir. What's another one? Well, there's a lot. Mandarina is another recent addition.
Do you do anything unusual during the mash or the boil process?
Yeah, the German brewers traditionally use a decoction mash with these beers, and the reason for that is because you have so much more protein in the wheat malts than you do the barley malts. A lot more gluten it makes up the total protein of a wheat beer, and so they'll use a long protein rest to kind of break that up some more, get some better extract out of the malt, and make the wort and the mash less viscous, much easier to handle and to lauter. So they'll do a decoction mash, often starting off. It can be a single or double decoction. if they do a double decoction, they may very well start out in what we call the ferulic acid rest range, which is about 40 degrees C, 40, 43, which works out to about 108 to 110 degrees Fahrenheit. And they'll let that rest there for about 10, 15 minutes and then boost that up to the protein rest. And let the protein rest go for about 10, 15 minutes. And then they'll pull a decoction from there, raise the decoction up to the saccharification temperature, say, mm-hmm. 65 C, maybe even up to 67, 68. Let it rest there for a few minutes, then bring it to a boil. Let it boil for about 10 minutes and then bring that decoction back into the main mash, and that will raise the temperature of the main mash up to your saccharification step, which again, 65 degrees C, 150, 152 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's what they're trying to do. They'll also then do a mash out, say around 165, 170 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. And they may do that by direct heating. These are modern breweries, so even though they do a decoction, their mashing vessels are steam jacketed and fully heated, just mm-hmm. like anywhere else.
So they do a mash out, and I assume it's just a traditional sparge at that point, right?
Yes. Using all that wheat makes the beers much harder to lauter. The lauter tends to take a little bit longer, but again, that long protein rest during the mashing process helps break up some of that viscosity. I'm trying to think what other aspects mm-hmm. come into play. The boil mm-hmm. Is also changed. From say a traditional barley okay. mash boil, the boil times tend to be about an hour and a half to 2 hours because there's a lot more protein to coagulate in the boil.
So fairly long boil.
Fairly long boil. You do have again with wheat malts, you have a very low kilning temperature. These are not highly kilned, so they're very similar to your standard Pilsner malts, which have a lot of DMS precursor in them. So which is the
so the longer boil also helps reduce the DMS then, right?
Yes, very much so. And so you really don't want DMS or other off flavors in these, light, really very lightly flavored beers because it really sticks out.
Now, you mentioned earlier a lot of the flavor in these beers is derived from the Bavarian wheat yeast that's used. What's so special about this yeast?
Well, it's what we call a phenol off flavor positive yeast. That is, and in some regards, it's very your traditional baking yeasts tend to be this same kind of phenol off flavor positive. If you were to try to do some home brewing with a traditional baking yeast, you would get some of these strong phenols. But in the case of these German wheat beer yeast, this is this strain. It's a strain that's been in continuous use for hundreds of years, and it's one they they maintain a lot. It produces a chemical we call 4VG, which is a mm-hmm. long name, basically a phenol that gives that characteristic clove flavor. And the source of that chemical is the ferulic acid, which is present in malt, both in barley malt and wheat malt, but there's a lot more of it in wheat malt. And like I said, you can do a ferulic acid rest during the mash to enhance the amount of that acid that's in the malt. And then when you get to fermentation, the yeast metabolize that ferulic acid to produce that 4VG compound. And so that's where that flavor, that characteristic flavor comes from. These are the Weihenstephan wheat beer yeast. WLP 300, Y yeast. Let me find that number. Got too many papers here on my desk.
That's okay.
Anyway, here we go. 3056. Mm-hmm. Y yeast 3056 is the other equivalent. These yeasts are a top cropping yeast, and open fermentation is very traditional in these German breweries for brewing wheat beers. And the open fermentation helps enhance the ester profile. There's a lot of art to producing a really good Bavarian wheat beer. You want a balance between the fruity esters and the clove. You don't want one, you know, dominating the other. You don't want it to be just strictly banana. You don't want it to be strictly clove. You want the nice balance. And it also, you don't want so much ester and clove that the beer ends up tasting like bubblegum. Bubblegum. A readily identifiable bubblegum aroma is a flaw. There's a delicate balance between looking for balance and complexity of the esters, both banana, apricot, pear, apple, peach, you know, these, you know, a medley of fruit flavor, fruit aromas besides banana, balancing the clove to make for a very interesting wheat beer. And so all this comes back to the fermentation, the yeast, the pitching rates, and the fermentation.
Well, let's, John, let's talk about that for a minute. What do you do special during fermentation, aging, pitching the yeast, oxygenating it to make it perform well?
Yeah. Pitching rates, typically you're looking at like a 1.2 million cells per milliliter kind of pitching rate.
Mm-hmm. So a little higher than an ale, but not quite a lager, yeah, right?
Right. And you're looking at a kind of open fermentation. Now, at the last year's National Homebrewing Conference, one of the Barley Angels from Milwaukee, Paula Cartwright, did a real nice presentation on her efforts to brew a better wheat beer. And she experimented with open fermentation using plastic storage bins that you get at Target, mm-hmm. and versus, say, the, you know, our traditional buckets or other fermenters, and reported a definite difference in the amount of ester that she obtained in the beer as a result. So this mimics the way that the German brewers make the beers. They use wide, shallow fermenters that they can easily skim the hop residue, the hop break residue, another, you know, in the fermentation, pull that off, and then top crop the yeast for, you know, subsequent batches. That an open fermentation, you know, allows better access to oxygen, makes the yeast, you know, this yeast is used to a lot of oxygen, and if you don't have it, then you're going to get either suppressed ester production, where the phenols will dominate the beer, or if you, conversely, if you oxygenate too much, you can get the esters dominating. You get the phenols dominating again because the ester production will be suppressed. So there's a lot of balance in the way these are fermented.
So you want some ester production? Are you fermenting fairly warm then?
No, there's some variability. I think on the homebrew scale, talking to Jamil and other people that brew wheat beers, such as Harold Gabranson of, you know, from Quaff in San Diego, they prefer a temperature of like 62 degrees, so a little on the cooler side. But the key is to let that fermentation start free rising after the first 2 days, 2 to 3 days of fermentation, to let that free rise up a couple of degrees, to say 64, 65, even up to 68 by the end of fermentation. And this helps clean up any diacetyl in the beer. Mm-hmm. And also, again, encourages these esters and phenols that you're looking for in the beer.
So you're looking for more of a late ester production, not necessarily too early in the fermentation then, huh?
Well, yeah, esters are actually produced very early in the fermentation, within the first 36 hours typically. But what you don't want to happen is you don't want these aroma compounds to be overshadowed by, say, diacetyl and acetaldehyde, which can happen. So you want to keep that initial fermentation temperature a little on the lower end, and really prevent any fusel alcohols from forming during the fermentation, and allow these esters and phenols to shine free of any off flavors in the fermentation.
So how do you finish out and then either bottle or carbonate the beer?
Right. So these beers, again, ale style, they're not really lagered, although some breweries do, you know, do some cold crashing to help clarify them. But typically, everybody agrees that these beers need to be drank when they're fresh, within, say, the first 2 months, preferably. It's not a matter of the beers spoiling quickly or, you know, staling or aging badly. It's really talking to some people, the problem is more that these esters and phenols dissipate, settle out, and they in other words, these compounds oxidize with time and disappear from the beer, and just the beer becomes less lively, less interesting to drink. So that's why everybody says drink them fresh, is because that's when these accents are most perceptive in the beer, and the beer is more complex.
Now the beer is both bottled or filtered, and of course most of the Hefeweizens are served from a bottle with the yeast still in the bottle, right?
Yes. All of these beers this style is traditionally bottle aged, bottle conditioned. So the brewers will inject fresh wort and yeast at bottling time, and then age these beers in the bottle to carbonate them. The wort that they'll use varies between brewery. They may not use the same yeast strain. Sometimes they'll use their house lager strain, because, you know, at the warmer temperatures, the lager strain will be a little faster, you know, more drier fermentation than, say, the original W68 yeast. But you know, other breweries do use the W68 or the wheat beer yeast as their bottle conditioning yeast.
And of course, you mentioned these beers are all highly carbonated, so I assume you're carbonating at a pretty high level here.
Yeah, again, 3.5-4 volumes, sometimes up to 5, depending on the brewery.
So make sure you have your bottles that can withstand that too, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's why you see the bottles that you're buying in Germany are these heavier, 1 liter or, 750 milliliter bottles. They can take that kind of pressure. You do find kegged versions of these beers around. You'll find these beers on draft. But the more traditional and people say more flavorful option is to drink them from the bottle. I mean, to pour them from the bottle into a tall glass.
Well, how do things change when you're brewing something else like a Weizenbock, for example?
Well, for the Weizenbock, again, it's a very, it's a much stronger version of the style, very similar to the Bock or double Bock in terms of a lager, you know, comparison to a lager style. So the OG on a Weizenbock is 1064 to 1090. So, you know, a lot more fermentables in there. But the Grist bill itself, is very similar to your standard wheat beer. Weizenbocks can be either pale or dark. That is, they can be, you know, an augmented Weiss beer or an augmented Dunkelweiss.
So and the, there's a dark version, Dunkler,
Weizenbach. Yeah. One key flavor note for the Weizenbach is that you want, in addition to the traditional esters and phenols from the yeast, you also want to get malt esters, melanoidin type esters, you know, coming from some dark malts. So your melanoidin malts, caramel malts, the fermentation of these high gravity beers. Sometimes they'll add a little bit of roast malt, such as a chocolate malt. And the purpose there is to get these stone fruit esters that you get from melanoidins. You don't want to use a lot of roast malt. You don't want any roast malt character in the beer per se, but what you want is complexity. You want the addition of some of these darker malts to give you these esters. So just for complexity.
So which roast malts are you recommending again for this application?
A chocolate wheat malt is a good
chocolate wheat. Yeah.
Yeah. Or pale chocolate, regular chocolate malt is also acceptable, but you know, keep the percentage small.
What about, some of the new ones that are huskless or debittered? Would that work?
Yeah. Perhaps? Carafa, a little bit of carafa would certainly, that would add some of the color. But you need to, the problem with a carafa or a black malt type is that you're going to get more color than flavor. It's the chocolate type malts, that degree of roast that gives you some of the flavor complexity without the, say, the roast character that you would get from a black malt or a carafa.
Yeah, dry, should be dry more coffee, the, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to avoid that. You're looking for richness. So, a special B malt, a very dark caramel is a good addition because that'll give you those complex, ester notes and melanoidin sugars, you know, very, that'll give you some of that richness. Other caramel malts such as, caramel 60, caramel 30, caramel 75, caramel 120. Those are good malts to use, as are biscuit malts or melanoidin malts. You know, not necessarily caramel, but a higher kilned, giving you the biscuit and toast flavors that can be very nice in those beers.
And of course, a related variation, I guess, the Dunkel's Weiss beer. Would you use a similar approach for doing something like that?
Yeah, very much so. Again, the Dunkelweiss, you know, fits between the Weiss beer and the Weizenbach in terms of gravity. It's very similar to the Weiss beer, but what you're adding these caramel and toast biscuit malts to give some warmth to the malt profile. Mm-hmm. You're just adding that little bit malt character, make it a little more dark bread, a little bit warmer, a little bit more complex, but not really increasing the gravity of the beer beyond that of the traditional Weiss beer.
Well, John, do you have any other tips for brewing the perfect German wheat beer?
Wow. I would say, you know, look at your mash, look at the, you know, a multi-step mash to go through these various rests is a good approach. A decoction, I think, especially in the pale versions, like decoction will really help pull out some of that richer malt character that you're just not going to get unless you add, you know, a melanoidin malt component to your grain bill.
Yeah, you didn't mention that earlier, but melanoidin malt is one trick you can use to kind of simulate. It's not exactly the same. The decoction, right?
Right. It has some of those deeper malt characters, but again, that's a barley malt, so its flavor is not going to be the same as a decocted wheat, mash. And so the flavor is going to be subtly different, but you know, it's still beer. It's still a very rich, you know, satisfying beer. So if that's what you like, if you like it, you like it. Let's see, what are some other things? Mm-hmm. Again, I want to emphasize, don't go overboard with the esters and the phenol. Don't raise your fermentation temperature too high, trying to encourage those, because what you're often going to do is one's going to dominate over the other. Again, you want, these are accents, you want complexity, not prominence, if you will. Bubblegum is mentioned in the style guide as being potential aspect of the aroma, but I think if you get a recognizable bubblegum aroma and flavor out of the beer, it's too much. I would consider that a flaw.
So the bubblegum comes from what exactly? Is it too much phenol? Too much ester. Too much ester.
So. Yeah. And you can, I mean.
So you may have gone a little too warm.
You'll be getting some, you know, fusel alcohol in there, which will make those esters pop a little more, and be a little too sharp. But you want complexity. You don't want just banana. You want to have banana and some apricot, some peach,
clove flavor too.
In the clove, you want those all to kind of swirl around each other. But if you ferment too warm and you get too much ester, now those esters are going to start dominating. It's going to smell like juicy fruit gum or bazooka bubble gum, and that's really a flaw. So I think you'll enjoy the beer more if you can scale that back by watching your fermentation temperature and your pitching rates.
Well, John, I want to give you a minute to talk a little bit about it. First of all, I noticed you've got a new website out, right?
Yeah, I finally updated my website. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time.
There it is, howtobrew.com.
Yeah. Added references to my other, our brewing DVDs. Some other products I've been working on with people these last few years. You can see them, and there's links to the Brewing Network, where we do the Brew Strong podcast. There's our DVD that cover there. Mm-hmm. So I tried to make the website a little more useful for people, a little more up to date. I understand there's still some link issues I'm trying to get fixed.
But you also have almost the whole How to Brew book in there, right? Or at least an older version of it, right?
Yeah, it's the first, the online version of How to Brew is, it's the first version. There's a lot more information in the current print version. And right now I'm currently working on a revision again. So the next time you see
you're on version what, 4 now?
Yeah.
So he's working on version 4 right now, right?
Yeah, which is due to be published in early 2017. And that's going to have even more material, talking more about processes such as, hopping, bittering, fermentation, decoction, mashing, more recipes. I mean, I'm going to put sour beers in there, brew in a bag, just trying to bring it up to date. There's a lot going on in the brewing world these days, and trying to make sure I covered a little bit.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to that new version. You said 2017.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, you can read a lot of John's stuff at howtobrew.com. A great site with a lot of great information. Well, John, I just want to say, is there anything else you wanted to add?
No. I guess, yeah, visit the new website. There's a companion site called PalmerBrewingSolutions.com, where there's a link there on the How to Brew site, and that'll take you to the sister website where I showcase the different books that I've done with people, as well as the current products I'm working with in the industry. Just last week, we announced the Anvil line of products with Blickman Engineering.
Just pulled up, there's Palmer Brewing Solutions for folks that are watching on the video.
And those, we just came out with a new line of brewing equipment, pots, burners, scales, and such, and very nice products. I'm proud to be a part of them.
So that's Blickman Engineering. I was trying to pull up their website real quick.
The Anvil. If you look, go to anvilbrewing.com.
I'm trying to find it. I was just, I just spent a week with John myself, with John Blickman. There he is right there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the new website. I don't see the Anvil on here yet, but he's got a new product, a product line, the Anvil product line, which is, I understand you're supporting, right?
Yes. Yeah. I help design and, you know, not fabricate, but to engineer them a bit. So, I'm real happy to, I think it's a good line of products, going to help a lot of people.
Fantastic. Well, John, thank you again for being on the show.
My pleasure, Brad. It's always fun doing the show with you.
Always great having my good friend John Palmer on. Thanks again to John Palmer. He's the author of How to Brew at howtobrew.com. You can get copies of the videos that I shot with John also at beersmith.com/DVD. And John mentioned his other website, Palmer Brewing Solutions. John, thanks again.
My pleasure, Brad. Thank you.
Well, thanks again to John Palmer for joining me this week. Thanks also to Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine, where you can get your 15% discount on their magazine or anything in their store if you use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 when you shop at beerandbrewing.com. Again, use the offer code BEERSMITH2015 and get your subscription for this great magazine at beerandbrewing.com. And also, BeerSmith Software, the industry standard for home and professional brewers, it lets you design great beer recipes and brew with confidence. Download your free 21-day trial of BeerSmith software from beersmith.com today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.